Blog Talk Radio.
And welcome to Circle Sanctuary Network Podcasts, brought to you by Circle Sanctuary, one of the oldest nature spirituality churches in the United States, connecting people of nature-centered paths around the world. Join us through the week for a variety of shows discussing various topics, celebrating the divine in all of its forms through nature worship, rituals, education, and building bridges of community. And welcome to Nature Mystic with Selena Fox, a podcast where we enjoy encore presentations of topics covered by Circle Sanctuary's Senior Minister, Selena Fox, from her previous podcasts, Circle Craft Studies, Nature Folk, and others. In tonight's encore from July 23, 2014, Selena discussed ways to develop skills, meditations, and rituals to enhance the ability to locate, attune to, and harvesting growing wild plants.
Welcome to Circle Craft Study with Selena Fox. This is Selena Fox, and tonight we explore the realm of magical wildcrafting. Wildcrafting is a way of connecting with plants growing in fields and forests and other wild places. Magical wildcrafting is a method for doing that wildcrafting in sacred ways. Let us begin with an honoring of the spirits of the plants that grow wild. Spirits of plants growing wild, we call to you, we honor you. Be with us, guide us in our wild crafting. Help us deepen our understanding of you. Help us connect with the greater circle of nature of which we are part. And accept our thanks. So mote it be. I began wildcrafting when I was quite young, and it's been an important part of my life ever since. Wildcrafting is not only a way that I am able to gather plant materials for food, for healing, for ceremonies, for artistic endeavors, but it is a way that deepens my connection with the plant realm. One of the things that I do as I prepare to do wildcrafting is to set aside some time to reflect on my connection with the plant or plants that I intend to quest for, connect with, and harvest, and work with. And to set aside time to think through where I will be, when I will be going, who will be with me, what methods I will use as part of the wildcrafting experience, what items I need to take. For me, wildcrafting itself is a sacred and spiritual process. It begins with that reflection, contemplation, centering, to prepare me and then proceeds to the actual event where I gather what's needed and I do what necessary preparations there are before I even arrive, then go into the process itself, honoring the plant upon going to the place where I'm doing the wildcrafting, as well as taking time to appreciate and commune with the plant, the spirit of the plant as a whole, as I'm doing the wildcrafting and making sure at its conclusion I give thanks. And then upon returning to my home area or the place where I'm going to be working with the harvested plant material, I spend time working with that plant material and then conclude that with another period of time where I not only meditatively express appreciation, but I reflect over the experience and make notes about it mentally and often in my journal as well. What I'd like to share with you tonight are some of the things that I've learned through my own magical wildcrafting over the years. I presently live in a forest in South Central Wisconsin, and it adjoins land, Circle Sanctuary Nature Preserve, and some other places where wildcrafting is permitted. That includes not only woodlands, but prairie and meadows and wetlands, a variety of different types of ecosystems. I make certain that I create sufficient time for a wildcrafting experience where I'm not rushed, where I can attune myself to the process as well as to the plants as well as the place where I'm doing the wildcrafting and the climate conditions. One of the things that's important to have as one sets about wildcrafting are some basic informational foundations. First of all, a good way of identifying the plant or plants you plan to wildcraft. If you are not already thoroughly trained in being able to identify the plant on your own, to have someone who is to go with you. That's the best approach. And if need be, to also take a plant identification guide with you of some type to make sure that as you search for the plant and make choices about harvesting that plant, that you are able to positively ID it before you do any harvest whatsoever. It's also important to have an understanding of the particular plant that you will be doing wildcrafting for. Is it an annual? Its life cycle being 1 year? Is it a biennial? And if so, do you need to harvest in the first year or the second year? Is it perennial? And most of the plants that I do wildcrafting with are perennials. And the advantage of perennials, especially hardy perennials, is that they are set up with their life cycle to come back every year And if one practices good wildcrafting etiquette and minimizes how much of the plants you're taking, then at that particular location you can go back year after year and still be able to do some wildcrafting in that location. It's also important to have the basic knowledge of what plants are endangered and threatened. Not only the plant that you may be looking to wildcraft, but what are the plants that it lives in relationship with? Because you may be working with one particular plant, but you need to be careful of other plants that might be growing in its environment so that you do not harm them as well. It's important to have an understanding of the geographical range of the particular plant that you'll be wildcrafting, have an understanding of what a healthy plant looks like, so that as you approach various examples of the plant, you will be able to assess its health and well-being. Having an understanding of how the plant grows and propagates itself is also important. Some plants will continue to grow if you harvest some of its root, for example. They're very hardy. Others, if you are harvesting it for the root, then you may need to plant seeds of that plant if you're taking the plant from its location to keep that continuing to grow. It's important to pay attention to what parts of the plant that you are seeking to harvest. For some times of year are better for some types of plant parts than others. Time of day is another important consideration for deciding when to do the harvest. And paying attention to environmental conditions. If you are planning to do wildcrafting and to dry the plant material, then you will need to harvest in the morning of a day, hopefully sunny with low humidity. Another thing to look at and get some knowledge about is the whole wildcrafting process, how to attune to the plant and to work with the spirit of the plant species to be guided to how much to take and where to connect with the plant. It's important, too, to develop your own sacred process for doing the wildcrafting. I shared a bit about my own, where I take time out before I head out for wildcrafting and have a meditative experience. And then when I go to the actual place, I do an additional attunement to the plants, as well as at the conclusion of the wildcrafting experience, and then again at the end of having returned with the plant material and done some reflection on that. I think many people do wildcrafting in a meditative state and do not necessarily call it that. And ideally, you are focused on being in tune not only with the plant that you seek to do some harvest, but with the whole landscape, the community of life of the land where you are at. It's important to pull together the items that you need for a wildcrafting experience. And I'd like to share some of the things that I've found useful and that I take with me when I do wildcrafting. I have a good pair of hand clippers, and I use those for harvesting flower tops, stems, and leaves. I have a trowel if I'm going to be harvesting a root, a trowel that works well in my hands. I also make sure that I have a sufficient number of containers and the right kind of containers for transporting and collecting the plant parts. One of my favorite containers to use is a woven basket. And when I go out to collect wild mint, I take clippers and the basket. And I make the basket of sufficient size that it will hold the mint that I plan to harvest and that I plan to use. When I'm harvesting berries, instead of a basket, I take a plastic pail, which is of sufficient size to put in lots of berries but not have them crush upon each other. When I'm collecting angelica seeds, I use a paper bag and clip off the seed heads with the seeds on them. The flower of the angelica that is then turned brown and the seeds are very dry and ready to fall off. I clip that whole seed head off, seeds and all, and put it in paper bags, and generally have a large basket that will hold the individual paper bags for that. When I am collecting a variety of types of herbs, then I make sure that I have bags, pails, and or baskets sufficient that I can put the individual types of herbs in separate containers. And I like to take along markers and paper for when I'm doing multiple wildcrafting experiences. So that way, I have a clear understanding of what each type is. A plant looks one way when it's fresh, and then once you've started harvesting it, it can start changing shape as it starts drying out. And it's really important that you keep the different types of plants that you harvest separate and identified. Another type of harvest aid that I use are twist ties and rubber bands. And these I typically use towards the end of the harvest after I have collected the material and I'm beginning to process this for drying. In the case of mint or yarrow, I will strip off leaves from the bottom several inches of the stalks. And I'll set those leaves aside in a basket or other container. And then I will take the stalks, and there may be as few as a half a dozen, as many as a dozen or more, depending on the thickness of the stalk and type of the plant. I'll put a thin wired twist tie vertically along the group of stems. I'll put a rubber band and band it all together, and then I move the twist tie to form a circle by twisting it upon itself. And that is a very easy way to get an herb bundle that can be hung for drying. In addition to gathering equipment, in addition to doing preparatory meditation and planning, in addition to having basic knowledge of plants and their cycles, it's really important to select the right place or places to do your wild crafting. First of all, look at places which are not contaminated by pesticides or other pollutants. Ideally, a place where the air is clean, where there has not been pesticides spraying from the ground or from the air, a place that is sufficiently away from the exhaust of motorized vehicles so that that pollution is not picked up by the plant. In addition to looking at the environmental dimensions, it's important to pay attention to the permission factor. Some public lands require a permit and have protocols, how much you can harvest, when you can harvest, where you can harvest. Some public lands require you to do your wildcrafting some distance away from established nature trails. Some public lands do not have that kind of restriction on it. So it's best if you're going to be in a public park of some type, some kind of public land, that you get the information about what is permitted in terms of wildcrafting and what permits you may need to obtain before going to the place. I prefer to do my wildcrafting on private land. And in this case, it's important to get permission of those who are the owners or the caregivers of the private land. If you have your own land, then of course you have a pretty easy time of it. You will go to the places that you sense are right. But if you're using even a friend's land, be sure to have a conversation in advance about when you can come and what the expectations are about doing any kind of harvest there. It's also important when you're going to a place that you have not done wildcrafting for the first time that you get some good sense of the lay of the land, have an understanding of where the trails are, whether you can go off trail to do the wildcrafting, and it's always a good idea to have some kind of GPS device, a cell phone, a map, some kind of orientation aid so that if you're in a place that's many, many acres of fields and forests, that you have a good way of being able to keep your wildcraft flowing but not getting lost in the process. And once you've picked a particular place and have gotten the permissions and understand the protocols, then it's a good idea to get a sense of when the best time, not only time of year, but time of day, to do the wildcrafting. there are some general guidelines about wildcrafting different parts of plants. Many people look at getting roots, for example, in the springtime and in the autumn. When the energy of plants really are concentrated in the roots, when you're getting stems and leaves, as they start appear in the spring through the early fall before frost happens, certainly at the height of the summer, these are times to gather stems and leaves. And sometimes you may find that certain times of the growing season will be better times for leaves, for example. If you are going to be working with wildcrafting a plant that will be flowering during the summertime, then you may wish to do your harvest before the plant comes fully into flower, unless you are seeking to harvest the flowers as well as the leaves. Berries, it's good to pick those when they have fully ripened, when they're at their peak. Seeds, when they're fully formed. Bark, it depends on the type of bark, whether you're doing the outer bark or an inner bark, and the particular kind of plant. Many people will gather the bark of a plant in the fall when it's cooler out. And a good rule of thumb for doing any type of wildcrafting activity, especially with the idea of using the plant in a dried form, is to do your harvest in the morning after the dew has evaporated. So late morning, midday are really good times for the most part for doing wildcrafting. If it is extremely hot, it's better to get the leaves during the cooler time of the day. Some like to harvest under the moonlight, and certainly for spiritual purposes, that can be a really fabulous time. Here again, it depends on the plant that you're wildcrafting and what you're going to be using it for. In that case, when the moon is full and the light is glowing, being able to go out and to do your harvest at that time. Something else to keep in mind in wildcrafting is how much you harvest. There are many different viewpoints on this. I think it's really important that you be attuned to the spirit of the particular plant type that you are harvesting and to take cues there. But typically, if you come to a stand of plants of a particular type, you do not want to take more than a fifth of them. You want to make sure that there not only are sufficient plants so that plant community will continue to thrive, but that others who rely on the plants, birds and four-legged creatures, other creatures, pollinating insects, will have access to the plants. You do not want to take all the examples of a plant in a particular area. You should really only take some of the plant. And as you do so, if the plant is in flower and there are seeds that have been formed, it's a great idea to scatter those seeds around the area, some of those seeds, rather than just taking from the plant. Some additional things to keep in mind as you are preparing to do wildcrafting as a whole and magical wildcrafting in particular has to do with your intention for the wildcrafting as a whole. What are your reasons for wildcrafting? How do you plan to work with the plant material? Some reasons for wildcrafting include deepening your rapport with a particular type of plant. Another is to be able to deepen your understanding about the green world as a whole, to increase your skills in working with the land in sacred ways. Being aware of what your intentions are for working with the plants. Will you be working with the plant material you harvest as food, seasoning, or putting it in a salad, creating a beverage? Are you doing harvest for some type of fiber? Will you be creating art with the plant material? Will you be doing healing work? Is this to treat a particular ailment? Is this part of herbal first aid for yourself or others? Is this part of a ceremony that you are doing or will be doing? Will you be making materials from the plant parts that will be essential to your spiritual practice or spiritual practice of a community? As you hold your ideas in mind, be sure to focus on that intention, not only before you do the wildcrafting, but have that in your heart and in your mind as you do the wildcrafting itself. I'd like to share some examples of some plants that I have done wildcrafting with over the years. Recently, I've had occasion to do wildcrafting, harvesting wild bee balm, Monarda fistulosa, beautiful purple flowers. My main focus on doing wildcrafting of the wild bee balm is for the beauty of the flowers and to have the leaves be dried for amulet making at a later time. When I do harvesting of fresh flowers from the wild, I take a plastic pail and have water in the bottom. I attune to the plant. Then when I get to the field where the wild bee balm is, I look at the field as a whole as I call to the spirit of the wild bee balm to be with me and to guide me. Then I begin walking with my clippers and my pail with the water in it. And as I come upon my very first wild bee balm plant, I spend a few moments, I tune into it, I appreciate its beauty. I do not harvest the first that I encounter. I see that as a kind of guardian representation of the plant. And I have it be there to connect with in its living form and do my own personal prayers for its assistance in guiding me to the bee balm flowers to harvest. Then I began walking meditatively, focusing on the bee balm. And as I gaze at the various bee balm plants around, I get a sense of which ones to harvest. I typically will harvest individual stalks close to the ground, being careful not to take all of the stalks of a particular cluster, usually taking one or two, if there's a dozen or so there. I take the stalks and put them in the pail with the water, and by having them in the fresh water as I'm harvesting, it helps sustain the life force of the bee balm. Once I have made the rounds, then I give thanks to the bee balm as a whole, and then immediately go to a place where I process the bee balm. If I'm going to be creating arrangements for altars, which is what I've done several times in recent weeks, then I go to a place with a large table and a water supply. I have my clippers. I pull off the leaves from the lower part of stalks. I trim them. I have vases available. I have them filled with water, and I start the arrangements of the plants in the vases of water. And I take the leaves that would normally be submerged in the water if I just put the whole stalk in, I set them aside and eventually will put them in a basket where they will air dry in a cool, dark, yet breezy place. And then I will save those leaves for use in spirit bags, amulet bags, that are made for particular purposes. Then I will take the completed vases of the wild bee balm and place them ceremonially in a short ritual on the altar or altars that I have done the wildcrafting for. Now, wild bee balm also can make a wonderful tea. The purple flowers can be added to salad. And clearly, one could do wildcrafting with the wild bee balm for those purposes as well. When I do the harvest for blackcaps, also known as the wild black raspberries, I attune to that plant, and then wearing long sleeves and slacks to allow myself to go into the berry bramble and protect my skin, I begin picking. Here again, I pick ripe berries. I don't pick all the berries, and I leave some of the ripe berries on the plants so that they can fall and give new life and also feed birds and other creatures. For wild black raspberries, I do my wildcrafting for ceremonial teas. I will typically make a tea with some form of mint or lemon balm, bringing water to a boil, turning off the heat, putting in fresh leaves of wild mint or lemon balm, whether that's from the gardens or escaped into the wild. And then I will take berries and steep them all in a cauldron of hot water, stirring them, covering the lid in between the stirrings. And it makes a really delicious tea that is a summer delight. Sometimes I'll add wild honey to the mix to sweeten it. Although with lemon balm, you don't really need a sweetener at all. And once I have let the tea steep, then I strain it and put it in the refrigerator to cool it down. And it makes a really wonderful summer beverage that really can be drunk year-round. With yarrow, I work with yarrow in a variety of ways as part of spiritual practice, and it's been a sacred herb across cultures around the world for thousands of years. Its Latin name, Achillium millefolium, really goes back to ancient Greek mythology. It literally means Achilles' thousand leaf. And Achilles was taught the mysteries of yarrow by the centaur Chiron, who was his teacher, his mentor. And fresh yarrow leaves could be made as a poultice to staunch battle wounds. And we know it's been used as a healing herb to stop bleeding on battlefields and just from day-to-day scrapes and scratches. Since ancient times, the leaves had been used in teas to chase away colds and flu, to build up stamina of the system. It's a very bitter kind of tea. And what I use yarrow the most for is as a sacred gift for weddings and hand fastings. I harvest the flowers, and sometimes flowers and leaves, depending on whether I can use these fresh or whether I will be working with them in a dried form. But a traditional gift to a couple is yarrow, symbolizing lasting love. And having done quite a few hand fastings and assisted and attended them, I typically will give the couple that has a hand fasting or wedding some yarrow as part of my gifting. Yarrow stalks, without their leaves or flower heads, cut in 1 foot lengths, or sometimes people prefer them a little longer or shorter, are used for divination. And in doing wild crafting for a set of yarrow sticks to consult the I Ching, it's important to select a place where there's going to be more than 100 different yarrow plants, ideally in bloom, growing. And here again, as you move through the field, you will be honoring the yarrow and doing your harvest. You need at least 50 stalks to make a set of yarrow stalks for the divination. And it's good to go for the long, straight stalks since they make the best divination stalks for that purpose. And wild mint can be used to freshen up any type of altar. Some people will take fresh mint sprigs that have been wildcrafted and use them as asperging tools around a sacred circle, or will cast a circle with fresh mint sprigs, especially indoors as one walks around a sacred circle. The smell of the mint can really be uplifting for sacred circles. White sage is prairie plant, and one of the wildcrafting approaches that we do at Circle Sanctuary Nature Preserve is from time to time to go out and hunt for some white sage that we will then dry and use as an incense. Summertime, wild grape tends to be very abundant. And as fall comes on, one of my favorite things to do is to go out and to harvest some grapevine. And as the harvesting is unfolding with the wild crafting is to actually weave the grapevine in hoops, and using those hoops as ritual items for hanging ribbons, prayer ribbons, blessing ribbons, creating a home blessing charm by attaching various amulets to it. Another wonderful thing one can do in wildcrafting wild grape. I live in an oak forest, and acorns start happening in the summer as we move to the height of summer. And each year, I gather acorns from the wild. These are not only symbols of good fortune, but they are connected with strength and wisdom and the summer solstice. And I gift people with acorns at our annual morning summer solstice ritual each year at the Pagan Spirit Gathering. I mentioned angelica seeds, and as summer reaches its height, these seeds start turning brown and they're ready for harvesting. An old charm for blessing the home is to take some of these seeds and put them in an amulet in the home, or to put them in corners or other places in the home to bring blessings. Mullein is an example of a biennial herb. It has big, broad, fuzzy green leaves in its first year. It gets them in the second year as well, but the second year is when it sends up a large stalk. And these stalks are known as hag's tapers, or crone wands, or Jupiter's staff, depending on the particular tradition that one is from. And when they are dried, they can have the tips dipped into tallow, dipped into wax and let the wax solidify, or dipped into some kind of oil and actually used as a ceremonial light. And there are many other types of wild plants that have been part of my wildcrafting experience, but these are just some examples. So in summary, as we take a look at magical wildcrafting, it has multiple steps. After you've gotten some basic instruction in this and you are looking to do a wildcrafting session, having that time where you are centered, and you begin your process by not only attuning to the spirit of the plant that you're seeking with, but the intention for what you'll be working with the plant material with after the harvesting has happened. Going to the place, being centered, attuned, make some contact with the first of the plant type that you'll be wildcrafting, inviting its help, and then going about the process of wildcrafting, being attuned to the plant, attuned to the process, attuned to the land, to the climate, to the weather conditions. And then as you conclude, giving thanks for the harvest. And then following that up by taking the material that you have wildcrafted to a place where you can immediately put it to use, or you do some processing if you're going to dry it or do some other storage of it, freezing or putting it in some type of decorative space, so that you actually follow up your wildcrafting by continuing to work with the material for the purposes for which you have gotten it. it is a good idea as part of any spiritual practices to take some time to reflect on what you've done, to be appreciative of the sacred forces that you've worked with, and to make some notes of that about your experience and what you've learned and what you might do differently or in addition the next time you do wildcrafting. We give thanks to the spirits of plants growing wild. We continue to honor you. We thank you for being part of our lives and part of our studies tonight. May our understanding of you and the greater circle of nature continue to deepen and grow. We give thanks. So mote it be.
From the mists of Tegid shore, a lady looks upon her son like many times before, and she touches his face, fingers wet with the tears falling. Her daughter stands beside her, the fairest in the land. How her son became so cursed she cannot understand, but this mother's love is as strong as her heart is beating. And she calls to the earth, and the earth hears her calling. Stands tall. All magic and all mysteries are held within these walls. So she walks to the door. As she does, the door it opens. Teach to me the mystery of the cauldron's brew. Let utter darkness give way to light and be reborn anew. Then the Arwen will shine from the brow of the eagle of the sea. And all will know his name from this land to the people of the sheep.
The cauldron cracks, the poison creeps slowly across the land, to kill the horses of Garinir at the lake shore where they stand, drinking and not knowing their fate, as a hare runs fast across the land. Ceridwen, Ceridwen, Lady of the Cauldron, come see what they have done. Stolen your cauldron's power and betrayed your only son. Your eyes wide, lips curl, anger on your face. Change your shape now, Lady. Be the hound. Begin the chase.
Begin the chase. Begin the chase. Begin the chase.
I shall be a running hare with sorrow and with mickle care.
Then I shall be a greyhound bitch and tear you from your skin.
Then I shall be a flying wren, the king of birds, the king of men.
So I shall be a falcon grey and tear you from your skin.
Then I shall be a salmon sleek, darting through a shallow creek.
So I shall be an otter bitch and rescue you from your skin.
A grain beneath the sun, and you will never know which one.
Then I shall be a great black hen and take you deep within.
Now you given to think my tale is over and done, but 9 moons later she gave birth to a son that she wanted to kill, but she placed in a coracle on the sea. Garinir salmon weir, a catch was guaranteed, but on this day a baby boy cried out to be free. Plainly see. Taliesin is your name, the greatest bard that this land will ever see.
Thank you for joining us on the Circle Sanctuary Network podcasts, presented by Circle Sanctuary and produced for all who follow the Nature Center paths. Join us here throughout the week for various programming connecting the community around the world. And please don't forget to watch for updates on the Circle Sanctuary website at www.circlesanctuary.org. And follow us on Facebook at facebook.com/CSNpodcasts. We can also be found on your favorite podcast hosting sites, such as iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, and others. And until next time, many blessings.